Welcome to the Financial Analyst Journal Author Interview Series. I'm Abby Farson-Pratt, Assistant Editor at CFA Institute. We're here today with Janusz Konchitki to discuss his recent FAJ article, Accounting in the Macroeconomy, the Case of Aggregate Price Level Effects on Individual Stocks, published in the November-December 2013 issue. Janusz, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you very much for inviting me. Good morning. Mm-hmm.
In this interview series, we invite our authors to discuss their articles with us. So let's dive right in. First, Jana, what was the practical issue or issues that motivated your research?
The practical issue is that under the generally accepted accounting principles called GAAP in the United States, there is no adjustment for inflation. So financial statements are nominal. For example, take Walmart. If Walmart bought two parcels of land, one parcel of land was purchased 100 years ago for $1 million, and another parcel of land was purchased a year ago also for $1 million. What happened is that Walmart chose the two parcels of land combined together as an account. It's called land on its balance sheet that is equal to $2 million. The problem with it is that $1 million 100 years ago is not equal to $1 million 1 year ago. And this is because of the purchasing power of the dollar over time. So when we combine in financial statements amounts that arrive from different periods, where the dollar has different economic content, we're comparing apples to oranges. So this leads to a distortion of information that are obtained from accounting financial statements as they are done today, namely the nominal financial statement without adjusting for inflation. Now, the inflation effects are substantial because the inflation affects all assets and liabilities. Therefore, even low inflation leads to major economic effects on firms. Now, Abby, I want to give you one example of an asset that is affected by inflation, just to explain it further. So let's take, for example, cash. Now, many firms in corporate America, they hold substantial amounts of cash on their balance sheet. You know, let's take some examples from last year. Apple held $137 billion or something like this on its balance sheet in cash and other liquid assets. Microsoft held about $68.3 billion on its balance sheet in cash. For Apple, also, it was just cash, $137 billion. Google held $48 billion in cash. Cisco had about $46 billion in cash. Apple actually was even sued for its high cash holding. Now, where does inflation kick in? So suppose Apple, with its cash of $140 billion, so what happened is that if Apple put this money in the bank and get like 0.5% today for the cash holding or 1%, so Apple shows for the $140 billion, it shows 1% of the 140, which is $1.4 billion in its interest, as its interest revenue. Now, the inflation effect, we don't see it from the financial statement of Apple, but $140 billion, let's take about like 3-4% inflation that was in the last 20-30 years. So 4% inflation, although it's low, it's only 4%, but take 4% on $140 billion, you're getting an effect of about $5.6 billion loss in real terms. This is an inflation loss that Apple had just in 1 year. when the inflation was 4%. Now, we don't get this information from the financial statements. We just see the interest revenue, the $5.6 billion we don't see. And other companies, whatever cash they hold, this cash erodes over time. In every period, you just multiply the cash by the inflation effect. Now, these effects are substantial. It can be even 10 or 100 times than the net income. But the financial statements do not show this effect. So even further, as I explained in the article, last year the aggregate cash and other liquid assets totaled $4.7 trillion across corporations in the United States. So the overall effect, as I said, it can be several times, tens or even 100 times than the company's net income, even when inflation is low.
That's very interesting. How did you approach this issue in your paper?
So my approach was, hey, the financial statement of U.S. corporations are distorted with respect to inflation. They're nominal, but there are substantial inflation effects that we don't get from the financial statement. So I ask, one, can we identify the distortion? And second, are there implications for stock valuation from the perspective of investors who invest in Apple, who invest in other stocks? So first, to identify the distortion, I develop an algorithm or several algorithms as I describe in the paper. The idea behind the algorithm is the following. First, I use cross-sectional variation in the structure of assets and liabilities. Now, this is a key issue. I look at individual stocks, as the title reveals. And this is important because prior research on inflation mainly focused on the aggregate effect, which means how inflation affects the aggregate stock market portfolio. So there is a paper by Fama and Schwert that is a key paper in 1977 that looked at how inflation affects the aggregate stock market portfolio. And the conclusion was that there is a negative relationship. And there is a very long line and fruitful of research in economics, in finance, in accounting, about these aggregate effects. In my paper, I took a different approach. This is because companies, they vary in the way that they are exposed to inflation, depending on their structure of assets and liabilities. In other words, if one company has only cash, that this is a monetary asset, it is affected by a company that holds only a parcel of land. This is because the cash erodes over time because it's monetary, whereas to a first approximation, non-monetary assets, if you look at the specific indices of real estate, of PP&E, to a first approximation, the increase in value that is associated with the increase of inflation. But with cash or other monetary items, we don't get it. So what I said, okay, the algorithm is based on the idea that every firm has a different structure of its assets and liabilities, the cash, land, property, plant, equipment, intangibles, liabilities. So I went firm by firm and restated the financial statements based on inflation-adjusted amounts, such that I extracted the overall inflation effect of every firm in the population that, of the database that I used, which is the CompuStat Fundamentals, which covers all firms in the market over like the last 30 years that I focus on. That usually when the inflation is low. So this is how I identify the distortion. The second step is that I said, okay, now we have this piece of amount of distortion on the financial statement that we don't get from the nominal financial statements. So I form portfolios using all inflation effects for all firms in the market. Every period, I rebalance the portfolios. And then I form trading strategies that say, okay, let's long in one portfolio and let's short the other extreme. So this is a standard asset pricing, like the cutting edge asset pricing is done today. I did what is called a zero cost investment portfolio, where I short and long the two different deciles in the portfolio that is based on the inflation effect. And then I identify the alpha. The alpha captures the excess return that is unexplained by risk factors like the French momentum, and also I use like other risks that are related to the balance sheet bloat effect. And then I check what is the alpha for investing based on the inflation effects that affect firms differently in the cross section. And then using these trading strategies, I show that they result in economically and statistically significant returns that are even adjusted for risk of about 12% annually compounded and risk adjusted just based on these varying effects of inflation in the cross section.
Hmm. That's great. So, Yaniv, how do you think that your findings or results will influence practice?
So, I think that the result can influence practice in the following way. First, I identify different algorithms to adjust individual firms and different ways to adjust individual firms' financial statement for inflation. Second, I show how investors can benefit from this adjustment. Third, I show that there are substantial risk-adjusted returns from incorporating the inflation effect on individual firms. Fourth, I focus the attention from literature over several decades that look at the aggregate effect of inflation on the entire stock market portfolio. So first, this literature has looked, as I explained before, at the aggregate effect of inflation on the entire portfolio. And second, it concluded that there is no ability to hedge against inflation. In my case, I showed that first, not looking at the aggregate effect, but rather isolating the effect that inflation has on Apple and Microsoft and Cisco and Walmart. And each firm, it affects differently, depending on the varying structure of an asset and liabilities, as I explained before. So first, I focus the attention to these individual stocks. And second, I show that it is possible to obtain edge returns adjusted for risk just from incorporating the effect of inflation on stocks. In other words, I show that incorporating the inflation effect is not fully impounded, or that the inflation effect on individual firms is not fully impounded in stock prices. Now, finally, I show that even though the current financial reporting regime in the United States is nominal, I show that it is possible to extract the inflation effects without the need to impose an inflation-adjusted reporting regime. In other words, if practitioners or researchers are interested in obtaining the inflation effect on firms, they don't need to wait until, if any in time in the future, the SEC and the FASB will mandate inflation-adjusted reporting regime. We still can continue the reporting regime as we are doing it today, but still I show that the way that enable us to extract the inflation effects on firms without the need to have the real or inflation-adjusted reporting regime.
Great. Well, Yanev, thank you for taking the time to share your research and ideas with us. We encourage all of you to read this article and articles from other CFA Institute publications on our website, cfapubs.org. You can also follow us on Twitter at CFApubs. Thank you for listening.